We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Green Bay Packers fans, and welcome to another edition of the Daily Draft brought to you by the good folks at Badger State Brewing in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And it is our very first bonus episode. Hopefully many of you have either already listened to or watched Mock Draft Monday, but there's a little thing that went on in the draft world. Probably, I would argue, the second biggest deal that we have in draft season, only to the draft itself. That is the NFL Combine. So we are going to break down the winners and losers of that event. And joining me very last minute, which we really, really appreciate because I was put in a little bit of a bind today, none other than the number one rival to the Pack-A-Day Podcast, Mr. Peter Bukowski. Peter, how are you, man?
I'm good, Ross. I'm excited. There's so much to dig into with the numbers and guys who are still going to test. And so I can't wait. I've already started the like, hey, this guy worked out better than I thought. Let me go back and watch him a little bit again. So yeah, I'm really excited to dig in with him.
Let me give you the floor for just one second because we do a lot of prospect primers do Mock Draft Monday. I've chosen Mock Draft Monday as kind of the time that I have to get like a takeoff. So I'll take like the first 6-7 minutes of Mock Draft Monday and address something that I've been getting a lot on Twitter or X or just kind of a philosophy of mine as it relates to the Packers and how they do things. And so my opinion on what people would, I think, kind of, and I'm sort of rambling here, but I think the general idea from the fan base is the Packers are A, stringent, and B, kind of too stringent on like their athletic requirements. I feel like there's a lot of negative, not a lot, but I would guess that most of what I get on, well, you talk about RAS, this, that, or the other, is that Green Bay is maybe too obsessed with what we just saw, which is the underwear Olympics of it all, the running, the jumping, the lifting, all of those things. What's your take on kind of the Ron Wolf thresholds that became the Ted Thompson thresholds that became the Brian Gutekunst thresholds? What's your sort of take on just kind of how they do business?
Yeah, that were actually started as the Al Davis thresholds as well. I mean, he kind of got off the deep end with it. Like, hey, just run the 40 really fast. But
the Darius Hayward Bay of it all.
But
that's mean. I'm sorry, Darius.
No, it's okay. We respect Darius. Remember, this is the Mike. I think this is a Mike McCarthy quote that in the NFL, there's the categories of players. There's good players, there's great players, whatever it is. It's like there's good players and great players, and that's it. Because everyone's in the NFL, everyone's really good. Yeah. And so we can just take that. Okay. If you look at the average NFL player anywhere, any position, pick a position, they are an above average athlete. And in fact, our pal, Kent LaPlatte, who does the relative athletic score, he calls it RAS. We kind of have like a GIF thing here with him. 80% of NFL starters are above average athletes or better. And so athleticism matters. Like, yes, you can point to the outliers and you can say, oh, look at this guy and look at that guy and look at this guy. They are exceptions that prove the rule. And I kind of am flabbergasted, especially when it comes to receiver. How could you look at the track record of Green Bay Packer receivers and go, yeah, they need to change this? Greg Jennings and Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb and James Jones and Devontae Adams and on and on and on. And go, they need to pick smaller players. When they've done that, they get Amari Rodgers. Oh, they need to pick, it's okay if they pick less athletic players. Okay, Josh Myers over Creed Humphrey, Jay Sternberger over Terry McLaurin. Like, we can point to all of these examples and go, actually, when Brian Gutekunst goes outside of his thresholds, or we want to say preferences, I like to say athletic models, they are less successful. And so I don't understand the like chase outliers mentality here. I don't believe in that. I think it reduces your probabilities of hitting. But sometimes you're going to hit. Like, if it were me, I never would have drafted Josh Sitton, but they did it and it worked out. So sometimes it works out and everyone wants to point to that one time it worked out and ignore the 300 times that it didn't. And so that's, you know, that's fine. I get it. It's usually to prop up a particular player. Like, for example, I know that you're a big fan of Saint Russell from Michigan, who's tiny. He's 5'9".
Thank you so much.
And I get it. You watch the tape and you go, yeah, this guy can play. He can absolutely play. I wonder, Ross, if they will for a nickel. When they said, Amari Rodgers, a different type of player for us. We look at him differently. I wonder if they'd be willing to do that for nickel corner. They basically never spent real draft capital of any kind on a corner that they intended to play in the nickel. And yeah. I just wonder if that is a draft philosophy or if that's just how it's played out. Because if you look at it over time, they've had a lot of like young players come in. Okay, now you're the slot and you become. Casey Hayward's the great example. He comes in as a slot and then moves outside. And that made sense. And then they drafted Demaryius Randall and they were able to move Casey Hayward back in the slot because they could put Demaryius Randall outside. It's really nice to have guys that'll play all over, but you have to have guys who can play all over. The Packers might have one of those guys. So it'd be nice to get a couple more.
Yeah, and even Demaryius Randall should have been playing free safety, but that's beyond the point. And really, that has been my biggest argument. I mean, I would say I'm very pro. I mean, I get plenty of crap for being as vocal as I am that it's not a huge problem.
I'll miss on athletes all day. Like, give me the chance to hit a home run with someone, and I'm good. Like, that's fine. I'll miss. And I have and will continue to miss betting on athleticism. That's fine. I will live with that. I would hate to bet all my chips on a guy who's not athletic, an outlier, a Bryce Young, who could still have a fine NFL career. Like, you watch him week one and you go, this guy's just not big enough. Like, those outliers to me are that you have to understand you're elevating your risk when you try and bet on it. You better have a really, really, really freaking good reason of doing that. I didn't think the Panthers did. I didn't like the Bryce Young pick. There were two quarterbacks I would have taken over Bryce Young. They took neither of them. And it looks like right now that those other two guys are just flat better. And because they have better traits, they have better physical tools. I think that matters in a lot of cases.
And the two spaces, I guess, that I have kind of championed a change or just an adjustment is how things are looked at. And really it's the slot both on both sides of the ball. I wanted them to sort of treat that as its own position and start to, oh, we'll just put our third best corner there, or we'll put our kick returner there, or we'll grab Chandon Sullivan from the Eagles practice squad and throw him there. It's like, man, you won a Super Bowl playing one of the best three defensive backs of all time at nickel, and he wrecked the game.
Yeah.
And you saw that blueprint and went, you know who'll be good at nickel? Keyshawn Nixon. And I get that there are, you know,
Charles Woodson doesn't grow on trees, of course.
Yeah, right. I get all that. But I just have wanted them to sort of treat it as its own thing with the Saint Russell stuff. I mean, we're still talking about an 85th percentile athlete. And he on the Raz side for being 5'9 and 3/8, which is taller than I thought. Not much, but taller than I thought it might be. Being 5'9, 3/8.
There was some talk that he might be like 5'7.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, 182 is not that big of a deal when you are 5'9 and 3/8. He's got a basically a 19th percentile height and a 25th percentile weight. So for the, that drags down your relative athletic score. So for the relative athletic score to still be 8.51 is actually really impressive to me.
Means athletically he's really, really gifted.
100%. And especially, what do you want from a guy that's small? Well, he needs to be able to jump. And my God in heaven, can he jump? His explosives were crazy. Almost an 11-foot broad and a 40-inch vert. But it's not the Mikey Sainristil episode. We've actually already done that. So the slot.
Go back and watch it.
Slot receiver and slot corner, and they did. They said, hey, Amari Rodgers is a different thing for us. That's why our whatever doesn't apply, and it went terribly. by the way, the whatever didn't necessarily apply perfectly to Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed is not and was not a tier one fit. Jacob Stack, outed his real name. Jake's a teacher. Now I really outed him. Jacob Morley, whose real name is Jake Stack. I think enough people know that. He developed kind of these tiers for that we use on the Packer Report draft guide, where it's like, okay, if he hits all five of these things, he's tier one. If he goes 4 for 5, he's tier two, and on down the line. Jaden Reed was not a tier one Packers receiver, and it appears to have worked out tremendously. And maybe that's
because they also told him to add weight. They said, can you get to 195 and be okay? And he said, yeah. And so he said, okay, I'll bet I'll put on the weight. And he did.
Right. But not necessarily even as tall as they would normally like. And I can't remember if there was maybe an agility that he either didn't run or didn't necessarily jive, because he's 40 jived fine. Jaden Reed's plenty fast. But anyway, not a tier one. He just was not a tier one. And in fact, they really like you if you're like 6'1", 205 or better. I mean, that's you think about James Jones and his thick build, and then of course Jordy Nelson, and I mean Greg Jennings and Donald Driver were certainly on the smaller side of even what they actually like, and they took Drive in the seventh. The other thing is the adjustment for me at wide receiver, I would have been more okay with because of the change of the rules. I think guys like Tank Dell can survive as he ends the season on injured reserve with a broken leg that happened on a goal line. But your Tank Dells and your Tutu Atwells, you know, they've been put into McVay Shanahan systems. Obviously, literally Tutu Atwell plays for McVay.
Yeah.
So it can be done. And I know that Matt wants guys to go out there and run block. Like I get all that for sure, but I loved Tank Dell, and that's not like, hey, look at me, I was right. That, cause I've screwed up on smaller receivers too, but a guy like even Xavier Worthy, I don't think Brian Gutekunst is even acknowledging Xavier Worthy exists
at
165 pounds.
No,
I would. But that's me. And so that's part of the tough part of Packers projection too. I love Tavondre Sweat. I have been talking a ton about Tavondre Sweat. You think he's not going to be a Packer?
No.
So there are guys that I like, and then I have to separate that from projection to the Green Bay Packers. Anyway, we've gone on long enough with this. We're going to try and keep this to roughly 20 minutes, and we haven't even gotten into what the heck we're talking about today, which is big winners and big losers from the NFL draft. I'm going to go ahead and get started on the offensive side of the ball. And Kent does such a great job by kind of, I mean, he literally will take the elite ones and put them in green and the bad ones and put them in red. So
yeah.
The work is almost done for us. On the offensive side of the ball, my heart, my soul, my love, Johnny Wilson. How about my guy? My comp for Johnny Wilson was the long-armed creatures from Stranger Things. That's my comp for Johnny Wilson. And I understand fully, not a tremendously productive athlete or wide receiver, absolutely gets after dudes in the run game, but Florida State could do a lot of winning, throwing the ball to Keon Coleman and handing it off to Trey Benson. And I'm not saying that necessarily excuses the lack of production from Johnny Wilson, but there were other ways for them to win. It's the Christian Watson argument. Green Bay has loved productive wide receivers. I went down the list. Jordy Nelson had a 1,600 yard year at Kansas State before Green Bay drafted him. Greg Jennings had 3,000 yard seasons at Western Michigan. Randall Cobb's last year at Kentucky, he had 1,400 scrimmage yards.
Yeah.
I can go on, but the point is the point. Christian didn't. Why? Because NDSU handed the ball off for 6.5 a carry and won 4 national championships while I was there. It just didn't matter. Now, I'm not saying that it doesn't matter at Florida State, but he was not the only option. And so for him, to have some of the agility stuff that he did, and just in general, and the exact opposite of what we just said with Mikey Sainra still applies to Johnny Wilson. His enormousness, which is, I think, 6'6", 3'8", and pert near 240.
Big dude.
That drags up. So had he run the 40 at 4.50, which I think was a little slower than that, but his 4.50 would be different than a 160-pound receiver who's 5'9", right? It's as more value. Right,
we have to speed adjust these things. It's why relative athletic score is not enough. We need to be able to adjust these. This is a huge thing in running backs. One of the biggest signifiers for running backs is spark, or now it's spork. I think they've changed the acronym for whatever reason. They tweaked the formula, but you have to be able to speed adjust these things. Keon Coleman, who I don't know if we're going to talk about or not, but he runs 4.62. You and I talked about him on the X Machine. But then goes out and runs the gauntlet at 20 plus miles per hour, was the fastest receiver in the gauntlet, and just looked like butter going through. I mean, just as smooth as absolute silk. And so I'm kind of just like, I don't care. I just don't like run a good three cone, spend the next month figuring out how to run the L and run a 6.98 L and be fine. That would be my advice to Keon Coleman. He's probably not going to do that, but,
find a way to run the 40 in like 4.57 too. Like just find a way to shave.
I mean, if you could shave a couple at a pro day, you gotta believe that like they're gonna shave a couple off anyway. That downhill track that they have at Penn State, they literally have a downhill. It's like 3 or 4 inches of downhill on the Penn State track. But the comp, I heard Mike Renner on Mina Kimes show comparing him to Darren Waller, and I think that is a potential. A potential comp there. The question I think for the Packers is like, okay, what is the value then? If he's going to do a lot of the same stuff that like Luke Musgrave is going to do, where does the value meet the upside there? I would kind of go the other way. Like I felt like Keon Coleman get a ball winner in this offense, and that's the only thing that they don't really have. Yeah. And I think Christian Watson can do some of that. I think Romeo Doubs can do some of that. Hell, I think Dontavian Wicks and Jaden Reed for their size can do some of that. But to get a guy 6'6 plus in the red zone, like they had some issues in the red zone last year. That cleans it up.
That's what Johnny Wilson is to me, is a red zone monster and also a perimeter. I put together a cut up of him just killing dudes in the run game. I mean, he's if Lazard was a better athlete.
Yeah.
And it was bigger. And again, you know, are you going to move him to tight? I don't care. Just on the roster. Like Musgrave splits out, Watson plays slot. They have all sorts of like different things that they can move around. I don't need him to block in line ever, but you even saw him as a wing and literally moving guys out. And so that was kind of my thing. You know, whether you call him wide receiver 5 or tight end 3, I truly do not care. But whether it's a Green Bay Packer thing or not, people thought he was kind of just a big dude and not much of an athlete. And for his RAS to end up at 9.88, is a rocket ship situation.
Pretty good.
So that's a big deal for him. I think the other obvious thing would be Xavier Worthy. We won't go there. I do want to talk about one other prospect at a different position that I think really did some work and will move up my board, and not necessarily even 100% because of the work that he did, because he didn't work his arms to be long, but a Washington offensive lineman, Troy Fautanu, I really thought was a guard all day long, still end up might being a guard all day long. I believe he was 6'3¾". Bakhtiari, I would guess, would be sort of Brian's Mendoza line. Once talked about Jair Alexander as being on the Mendoza line for corner. I don't know that Brian Gutekunst is going to allow anyone to trot out a 6'3¾" tackle, but Fautanu has elite arm length for a guy his size. He has length, and I thought that he wore 317 pounds really well. You can see the guys who are sloppy, and I'm not trying to be mean, but like when they do the on-field drills at the combine, you can see the guys who are sloppy, and you can see the guys who are 317 and aren't sloppy. And Fautanu was that. He moved really well, tested extremely well, ended up with just had it here, 9.45 RAS at tackle, meaning he's probably in the 9.7s at guard.
Yeah,
which means he's just an elite athlete. And I don't know that the Packers would take him necessarily to play tackle, but I think he'd be a great emergency tackle that you're starting at guard. And whether you're talking about a Green Bay Packers aspect or not, I think Fautanu was just a big winner of everything that went on, because he did what you needed to do, which is look good in a compression shirt and shorts and run well, which is what he did, and work out well. I just think it was a good weekend for Fautanu. I think
all these offensive linemen at the top, that like top tier of like 10 or 12, they all, and I don't know if there's really a cutoff. Brian Bulaga had 33 inch arms, right? Anyone that's had below 33 inch arms for the Packers has been a guard. Sean Ryan, Josh Sitton, TJ Lang, all those guys were 32, 31, whatever it is. It becomes interesting then when you've got someone like Graham Barton, who's 6'5", but it's 32 and 7/8 arms.
With a center.
like that's, I mean,
yeah.
Talk about if 33 is the Mendoza line, are we gonna quibble over an eighth of an inch when you're 6'5" and move like he does? You can play all five. I don't know, man. Like that seems like a foolish thing to do. And there are a couple guys at the top here who are in similar positions where it's like Jordan Morgan, same thing. He's 6'5", 6'6", 330. So he'd be the biggest offensive lineman they've drafted since Marshall Newhouse. And 32 7/8 arms. Is he a tackle? Is he a guard? I kind of don't care, because I feel like at 25, you could get a really good player who plays guard for you or competes to play guard for you. And worst case, he becomes your swing tackle and has a chance to compete for. Let him push Rashid Walker if you want to. See what you can do. See if you have someone who can play right tackle, and then Zach Tom can be your center if you want to do it that way. It just gives you a lot of flexibility. I'm never going to say no to a guy that I think could play tackle, but I'm going to try him at guard. And the Packers have a history of kind of doing it the other way. Like Derek Sherrod was a tackle that they wanted to play tackle, but they needed him at guard. And so they said, hey, why don't you give this a shot? It didn't go great. And then he broke his leg in 16 places. And so that becomes problematic. You need two legs to play offensive tackle. I don't know if you know that. But they're not afraid to cross-train people. Like, they were going to let Elgton Jenkins play tackle. Like, if last year Elgton Jenkins had been healthier, he probably could be their starting right tackle right now. Maybe Zach Tom is a guard. I don't know. But I think all of those guys, and I said this on Locked On Packers, if you believe in their ability to play both guard and tackle, then you give yourself a chance to hit on a guy who could obviously potentially start at either one of those places. But if you have a guy that you think can play tackle, then that gives you more options at 25. If you go, well, I think Fautanu can play tackle, or I think Graham Barton can play tackle in a pinch. And if he can't, then we'll put him at guard, put him at center, see what you can do. It just makes it more appealing to take one of those guys at 25, just on the chance that they can play tackle, because we're talking about first round draft pedigree. Like, I liked Rashid Walker. He was a nice player in year two, but that doesn't mean you can't upgrade from a player like that. That doesn't mean if you've got someone who's got, you think, first round ability, that they shouldn't get a chance to go do that. And so that just, it gives Green Bay a lot more options. And I love that for them at 25. In fact, my mock draft Monday, you haven't seen it yet. It hasn't gone on the X machine as we record this, but I picked Graham Barton at 25 and Tyler Guyton fell to me at 41. And I was just like, let's go. You've got a guy that could play guard, could play center, could play tackle. And Tyler Guyton, who could be a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle, has that kind of freaky movement skills. They've never drafted someone that big. I think they're going to have to start thinking about it when these guys come in like transformers, because that's what this class is right now.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Any big winners for you? A couple winners on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, so I mentioned those offensive linemen. I think this running back class, for as much as we had issues with some of the top guys not being top guys, like there is not even really a consensus top 50 kind of pick. Braylon Allen didn't jump the way that we thought he could. But to see Jalen Wright blaze a 40, talk about weight adjusted 40 time. Isaac Guarendo, former Wisconsin Badger at Louisville, home run hitter. Run 4.33 at 225. Dear God. Marshawn Lloyd from USC, who I was like, no, he's too small. He's 209. Shows up at 220 and runs 4.41. Like, it is your weight adjusted speed is such an essential thing for these running backs. And I'm missing someone. Trey Benson. I think he ran 4.37, 4.39 at 215. So they need some pop in this running game. I love Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones can be a Packer for life as far as I'm concerned. But this running back group on day two, you know, Audric Estime did not test great. 4.7, like if he falls to the fourth or fifth round, like I still probably would consider him. But I really, really like this middle tier, this day two group of guys between like picks 50 and 120. There might be eight running backs where I'm just like, sign me up.
I've been talking about that group all season. Ray Davis, things went kind of okay for him, but I mean, he's in that group for me with Jalen Wright and Audric Estime and with a guy I'm going to talk about now, which is maybe some things didn't go so well this weekend. And I feel bad for Bucky Irving and the way,
just too small.
Yeah. And not like there are small backs that work out fine. But you have to have some pretty elite stuff going on from a testing standpoint if you're going to be small. You can't be small and not athletic. That becomes, borderline disqualifying. You talk about RAS score.
Especially at 192. Like 192 and to not run fast or test explosively. Like that's like we're talking about borderline NFL player then at that point. And that becomes problematic if you're taking him on day two.
Right. And I had Bucky at 119 overall and running back 8 going. I mean, he was very much in the, and I like Dylan Lobb, who tested really well, except for speed. I think he's going to make it as a third down back in this league, right next to the guy that I have him right next to, which is Will Shipley. I don't know that Shipley actually tested. He might have been hurt kind of late in the season anyway. But that group that we've been talking about, which to me, I kind of now, especially after the combine, have a tier with Brooks, who won't do any testing because he got hurt super late in the season. Might have to bump my guy Blake Corum down a little. You need to be a little he's not disqualifyingly bad from a testing standpoint, but when you're that small, you should be kind of not. We shouldn't be having the "are you disqualified" conversation. We should be having "holy cow, he can jump or broad jump or run" conversation. So Corum was in that group, and I'm not saying he's gonna like fall off a cliff, but that tier had Corum, Brooks, then Trey Benson, who everybody's talking about, and it kind of wrapped up at RB4 and RB5 for me with Braylon Allen and Marshawn Lloyd, and they did fine, and all that is good. But Bucky Irving was sort of part of that next group, which I think has some specialty backs in it, like I said, Shipley, Laub, And I Estime being kind of the bigger specialty back, if you will, Irving being a smaller specialty back. Then you get into Jalen Wright, which is just sort of like, my college career maybe didn't go the way that I wanted, but I'm a space alien. That group. Well, now Bucky Irving, I don't know if he can even be a part of that group. And that's too bad. Anybody else that on the offensive side of the ball that had a weekend where you were just like, oh boy.
I mentioned Braylon Allen. He didn't do a lot, but I expected him to be much more explosive with the jumps than he was for someone that can deadlift a million.
Yes.
Like I kind of thought that like, okay, when you have that kind of power in your legs that you'd see more out of the broad jump. You'd see more out of the vertical jump. And it doesn't take away from what he puts out on tape. I'd still like to see him run a good time. I think that kind of can paper over a lot of things. I still think he fits really well with what the Packers are looking for from a big back. Brian Gutekunst talked about wanting a big back. And so that's a really nice thing to be able to have in your arsenal, that power. They need more though, I think, from that running back position. They need a home run hitter. And so I feel like if he's not going to be testing as that sort of explosive athlete, like AJ Dillon, not a home run hitter, and tested way more explosively than Braylon Allen, that makes me a little nervous. And so, you know, that's not great. Let me just add this name in here just to flag it. It has nothing to do with the Packers, but it's something I wanted to bring up. Why didn't Jaden Daniels weigh in? I don't understand. I understand not throwing. I understand not being a part of it, but like to not even measure when people are worried about your frame. And then you're not going to run your 40 at your pro day, but you're still worried. Like JJ McCarthy put on what, 15 at least pounds of whatever for the combine. I wanted to see Jaden Daniels show up, the quarterback from LSU, who might be a Minnesota Viking. And that would hurt me a lot because I think he's a really good player. I wanted him to show up, not to show up and compete like that, like the guy at, you know, harassing Caleb Williams. But I just found it surprising that he didn't show up with, you know, like, hey, I'm 215 like JJ McCarthy did, or hey, I'm 220. I wanted to see him do that because it would tell me that, like, okay, I understand this is a problem for me at the NFL level and I'm working to fix it. Now, if he shows up at his pro day and he's 225 and he like does the drills and looks great, cool. But I wanted to see it in Indy.
Sure. No, I get that. I miss too when everybody would work out. And this is just like get off my lawn stuff too.
Yeah, this is
like
old guy stuff.
Calvin Johnson worked out. Everybody know he was going first.
He wasn't going to work out though. He used someone else's cleats. That's the famous story. He said, sure, hey, I need a pair of cleats.
But what I'm saying is like we have a lot of these testing benchmarks from the top guys and the guys that knew they were going to be the top guys. And to me, it just kind of stinks that we didn't get to see like Marvin Harrison Jr. work out. It stinks that nobody does the agilities anymore. and that really is a schedule.
The Packers are part of the problem with that, Ross, because everyone knows now that there are teams, the Patriots are another one, where these agilities matter a lot to them. And so you only have, you know, something to lose in a lot of cases.
And they do them at the end of the day and you've already been working out.
I thought Brett Coleman made a really good point on that. Like do them first. But then I hear you, but then you hear the story of Roma Dunze, who, by the way, people are going to like be cynical about it. Not performative at all. He was there trying, he ran a 6.8 something 3-cone. And he had been in testing, felt like he could get down to 6'6", would be a crazy number for someone 6'1", 215.
Yeah, for someone as big as he is.
And he apparently ran it for like an hour trying to beat the number.
Everyone's gone.
He's just still there trying to beat this. And it's like, that is what I want. And I know that that's an old guy thing, but I'm telling you, it's not performative. I got a chance to talk to Rome at Super Bowl. If he goes to Chicago, I'm going to be so mad, Ross, because that guy is going to be an absolute freaking superstar. He's charismatic. He just is a special, special kid. And I can't say enough good things about him.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, I've got some Chargers buddies, and I'm just like, can you deal with that, please, at pick 5? I know you probably should take Fashanu or Alt, but can you just deal with that, please?
Or take Neighbors at 5 and let the Giants take him at 6, and then we're just, it's over.
Either way. Okay. A couple guys that on the defensive side of the ball that I think did themselves some favors for me. Number one is, and this was honestly kind of like a roller coaster, is Chop Robinson from Penn State, because Chop comes in and he's got these T-Rex arms, and that's super scary because length is an issue. And in general, you know, teams value length at the edge position because you don't want to get swallowed up by these big tackles like that. That's a very real concern when you are not one of these built in a lab, you know, long, I use the Stranger Things joke, but like when you don't look like Rashawn Gary looks, teams get a little scared. So at that point it's okay. I'm a speed rusher. Okay. Well, you better be a freak. And he is. and look, I think Chop, you know, does some stuff well with counter moves and stuff, but you're going to run a 4.25 short shuttle at 254 and run a 4.48 40 with elite explosives. And I'd be interested to see the three cone as well, but the 10 yard split of 1.54. Yes, he is just a speed rusher, but cool. You know, and if you're just going to win one way, I get it. That does lessen your value a little bit. And he's more of a top like 15 to 20 guy than a top 10 guy for me. But when he came in with the short arms, that I think was worrisome. And then it's how are you going to win at the NFL level? Well, I'm just shot out of a cannon. That's how I'm going to win at the NFL level. I am going to be faster than your tackle. I am going to turn the corner. And if I'm able to do that 10 times a season, I'm going to the Pro Bowl. And that's that, you know, that's kind of the, again, up and down. One guy for me, and this has Packers kind of written all over it, Pac-12, yada, 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 is I mentioned the honorary Jordan Love, Dontavian Wicks, Jaden Reed all-stars of last year's tape is better than this year's. And unfortunately, the next guy that I'm going to talk about was two guys on this list. One, things went really bad, and one, things went well. And the one guy where things went really well, and he's going to take a northward journey on my list here, is Utah safety Cole Bishop. Freak. and has some cool tape.
We thought it was going to be the other Utah safety who was going to test like a freak, and he didn't.
No, he's box safety all day. He's Hufanga from the 49ers. Seriously, like that's his and that's a super high level of what that guy is. But people talk about I call it center field. Halfley apparently calls it post safety, which I don't, whatever you want to say. That ain't Vaki. And I didn't think it was ever going to be. And that other safety in this system doesn't have to be like Charlie Pepper, and no disrespect to Charlie Pepper, but it doesn't have to be just a guy, right?
Right.
Nick Collins was the post safety and Charlie Pepper was the not. And you can have a really fun player. Well, I mean, you know, and you
you're right. You're right. They won a Super Bowl with Charlie Pepper playing the not.
And Hufanga is the really super exciting version of that player, right?
Yeah.
Well, I wonder which version of that player Cole Bishop can be, because he is a 98th percent athlete. And going back and watching the film, it's interesting how much he played like slot corner, which, and so does that, you know, project a free safety? I don't know, but in general, just kind of some of the range questions with him, I think from a purely athletic standpoint, it would be hard to answer them more firmly than Cole Bishop answered them. And I think, you know, he was player 106 for me. He had a low third round grade as far as after I got kind of into everything. A, I have to watch more games, but B, just based on testing, I mean, he's going to move up into the middle of the third round for me, just based on being a 98th percentile athlete. Cause as you said earlier in the show, like I'll guess wrong on athletes all day. Speaking of the Jordan Love honorary, my second to last year was better than my last year group. My guy, Cam Kitchens. Jesus.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. We're going to need the agent to leak something about something. 2.11 RAS. Miami's pro day needs to go well. And that is like not going to be a Green Bay Packers stuff. That is box safety stuff. You are now Charlie Pepper. And I don't mean that other than anything that he's just not, you're not going to play. He's either going to be in a quarter system or a two high system, or he's going to be a strong safety, and that's fine. And he can make plays. He's a very instinctive player, made a ton of plays, especially his second to last year at Miami. I don't ever say junior or senior because COVID has just destroyed designations, but 2022 Cam Kitchens was a absolute playmaker. You talk about disqualifying, and the guy who I always use is the Holyfield kid, Evander's son, the Holyfield kid from Georgia. People loved him. Top 60 type love, like mocked often, even sometimes to Green Bay in the top 64. And he went to the combine and things didn't get any better for him at Georgia's pro day. and I moved him to like 200th. And I said, this is disqualifying. What happened to Cam Kitchens in Indianapolis, if he can't make it any better at Miami's pro day, is basically disqualifying.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. And let me flip it, because there was a name that I put in a mock draft, I think 2 weeks ago. People were like, what are you talking about? You can get him on day three. And I think that is just out the window now. Dadrian Taylor-Demerson, the safety from Texas Tech. He went out and played really well at the Shrine Bowl. And he showed up, and he's a little short. He's 5'10 and change, but he's 197. So he's got the density that you like. He's in fact almost exactly the same size as Darnell Savage was coming into the NFL. Ran 4.41 at 197, jumped 38. That's in the 87th percentile, high 87th percentile, had a 10.3 broad jump. That's pretty good. Pretty good. Upper quartile in terms of percentiles. And he can play the post. He can play top down, and he is a playmaker. He makes plays on the ball, and that is something that the Packers, from a safety perspective, have just not had really since Nick Collins, frankly. Someone who can consistently, maybe like one or two seasons, games here or there of Ha Ha Clinton Dix was that. But he is someone who I think has that middle field safety written all over him, can come up and make plays from depth as a tackler, even at that size, plays bigger than he is. If you want the plays bigger than he is, all stars, Dadrian Taylor-Demerson is on it. And this is someone that our pal, our mutual friend, Jake Morley, turned me on to early in the process. He's like,
yeah, go I was watch gonna say, this kid. That's a Jake Morley guy.
And I was like, I watched him and I was like, dude, you are so right. I hope. And he's like, I think he's going to run fast. I was like, he looks fast, but you never know, because Kitchens looks certainly faster than 4.65 on tape. And so you're like, okay. And no, he's fast. 4.41 is fast. And yeah. Like, I think if there's a surprise, like the Packers take him a round and a half sooner than everyone thinks he's going to go, don't be surprised, because there just aren't that many guys that can play the post from college, especially because most teams don't ask him to do it.
Yeah.
He can do it.
And I think with Taylor-Demerson, he's going to move up kind of consensus. And a lot of these guys that hit, you're just going to see it. I mean, these guys that are hitting 95th percentile and up RAS are just going to move up. And it's not because everybody's following RAS. It's just because the guys that blow up the combine are going to move up. I mean, AD Mitchell is going to move up. You can't test like Christian Watson and not move up, which is basically what he did. And the other guy that's kind of in that boat, who's even a little lighter, that I really like and think maybe he could even play some slot corner, is Jalen Simpson from Auburn. He was the other guy with Taylor-Demerson that I was thinking, you know, is he a little small from what is he not quite, and he's even lighter than Dadrian, but another guy where I thought, well, if Halfley doesn't care as much, you know, you start talking about what will you really, if the free safety is that good at coverage, and if you're really going to count on your nickel and your strong safety to be the force players in the run game, how light are you going? Are you going to let 185 slide? Are you going to let 190 slide? Like what are you going to let slide at free safety? That's a question that we don't yet have answered. Anybody besides Cam Kitchens on the defensive side of the ball that really did not do it for you, or you think kind of probably, because there's one more guy I feel like I have to mention, but go ahead.
Well, I wanted Nate Wiggins to not be 173. I'll tell you that. Yeah. I that was befuddling to me. It's like, if you're going to run 4.29, can you be 180 and run 4.32? Like, I think that would be a lot better for you personally. I think Ennis Reikestrow Jr. has to be the name
that is the guy
for me. And now his agent did the thing. He's hurt. He had a hamstring injury. Like, before the testing was even done, this was out there.
Was a good agent.
He had a hamstring injury, and that happened during the testing. And so he said, like, I'm going to be back. And I believe him, by the way. I believe he is a tough MFer, that he played through it. He looked a little stiff running the 40. And so that makes more sense given how loose I think he looks on tape, that I was like, okay, well, maybe there was something wrong here. Like, I think he could very easily go out and run 4.42 at Missouri, and I'm not going to be that surprised. But he also, like, didn't jump great. And theoretically, that was when he would have been hurt. So it's like, okay, was it the first jump? Is that what happened? And you heard something like that's weird to me. It's just something I have my eye on there. Let me just shout out one more winner though. And it's really two more, the slot corners, Jerrion Jones from Florida State ran 4.38 at 6 foot 190. And then Max Melton is going to be a name that you're going to see related to the Packers a ton. It sounds like you're going to do a whole episode on yep. him. The Melton brothers in Green Bay at 5'11 plus 190 plus, you know, mid 4.3s and can cover, can play outside, can play inside. I think he could be the Packers Casey Hayward of this draft. Someone who starts in the yep. slot and eventually you move to the outside because he can do it. Max Melton is like a tailor-made Packer, but so is Jerrion Jones. Jerrion Jones in the Florida State, like they played a ton of man coverage, and he can play inside or outside, I think.
And you're getting, so this will come out after Mock Draft Monday, and I took Faetano in round one, and then I think Brooks with the second. Oh, Chris Jenkins. So Faetano, and then Chris Jenkins from Michigan, and then Jonathan Brooks from Texas at 58. So I was all the way through round two with no secondary additions. And then I used both third round picks on Jerrion Jones and Max Melton. And the reason that I took them both is because I actually believe Max Melton can hold up outside.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, the slot corners, good and bad. So Rakestra, I always viewed as a nickel, wanted him to play nickel in Green Bay. Tackles
he'd be the perfect well, nickel strong. In Green Bay.
Right. But he's got to test a little better. I mean,
well, sorry, he would have been the perfect right, nickel in Green Bay.
Right. And so that was tough to see because it's like, man, they're not going to pick before someone else will pick him. If this right. is his composite athletic profile, they're not going to pick him before someone else will.
Yeah.
But you like I mentioned, I was super impressed with, and we'll wrap up here, but I was super impressed with Mikey Sainristil still considering how much his height and weight were going to pull him down. And then you mentioned Jerrion Jones had a good combine and people view him as a slot corner. And then my guy from Kentucky, Andrew Phillips.
Yeah.
Had a
really, really smooth and twitched up in the, that seems yeah. like an oxymoron, but it's not like his ability to change direction. The athletic profile that he put together is really, really nice. I know the drills are like not everything, but he looked really good in drills.
Absolutely. So, yeah, if you're a team like Green Bay is that probably needs a refresh at the slot corner position, I think things went really well. The third round
is the spot. That's where yes. It's not a premium position, but it's still important. And so they've got two third round picks. Like that's where I think, and that's where I like this corner class at the top. And at the end of day one, like those, the guys between like 40 and 55, I just like, there's like one guy that I like in that range. So.
Yep. Yep. And he didn't test. Cause I think I know his name is TJ Tampa.
I think TJ Tampa can go earlier than that. I think I'm not going to be surprised if he runs 4.45 at Iowa State. And I think he's going to run fast. I think he could sneak into the first round.
My biggest thing with TJ Tampa is in my comp for him is Rasul Douglas. And that's great. And you would burn a first round pick if you knew you were getting third year Rasul, not what he was in his first 2 years, but he has the same type of thing where I got frustrated with Green Bay trying to play him as nickel is Rasul does not turn particularly well. And I would like to see how TJ Tampa turns. I would like to see I want to see the short shuttle and the three cone more than I want to see TJ Tampa's 40, but this is not the TJ Tampa episode. The two other guys that I wanted to mention on the defensive side of the ball before we thank Peter for his time, because this 20-minute episode is going on 44 right now is, the two guys that I kind of like at the nose tackle position. I have gone on and on this offseason about Byron Murphy basically ends up being the player from Texas, and he's great. And honestly, Braden Fisk, who blew up the combine, is great too. I'm not doing it. I'm not. The only guy that I think is sort of the exception for me is Chris Jenkins, because he is maybe the pound for pound best run defender in this. So I don't care if he's 297. Other than that, I'm not adding a sub rusher. Devontae Wyatt right now is not defending the run, not defending it well. He's just not defending it. And you add him to a room that already has three techs in Carl Brooks and Colby Wooden, who
good three techs.
Right. I mean, you're going to keep Colby Wooden, I think. Why am I adding to the three tech room? You know, if TJ Slayton or Kenny Clark gets hurt, I've got a really thin nose guard situation. So when I'm looking at nose guards and the two guys that I kind of like, that maybe a little juice there, T'Vondre Sweat and McKinley Jackson, no juice. They are nose tackles. They are Yeah. They are what they are. Okay. And they're not going to affect passing downs. So they're not premium picks. And that was just sort of a question that was answered. All right. Combine winners and losers, kind of a super XL episode, but that happens. I like to talk. Peter likes to talk, and we hope that you guys enjoyed this. Peter, thank you so much for your time, man.
Of course.
All right. Wrapping things up. We're going to do it real fast. Buy the draft guide. Promo code DAILY, DAILY, for 10% off. Easy. Follow me. I am at Ross Uglum. Follow Peter. He's easy to find on Twitter as well. And like and subscribe. Do all the things you're supposed to do. We'll even give you a quick shout out to both. Like and subscribe to the Pack-A-Day podcast. Like and subscribe to Locked On Packers. You're welcome.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.